Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And oddly enough, Jim, our good martini comes from the Oscars. It was an extremely long and in many times boring night of watching Hollywood award films, most of which none of us have seen. But nonetheless, it was their night to shine. And there, of course, were a number of liberal political statements made. Patricia Arquette won for Best Supporting Actress and made another push for pay equality and women's rights. There was the director of Birdman who pushed for amnesty in so many words. And then the best documentary was Citizen Four, which is the story of Edward Snowden. They came up on stage, accepted the award. Glenn Greenwald was up there. And then they kicked it back to host Neil Patrick Harris in the aisle, who said this.
The subject of Citizen Four, Edward Snowden, could not be here tonight for some treason.
Jim, that was about the only one that addressed a political issue that wasn't completely to the left. So good for Harris for doing that. And interesting that he decided to go there. Didn't even get that bad of a reaction.
No, there's a little bit. You can hear a little bit of groans. And some people, you know, might be a groan about the pun. Or clearly some people in that room strongly disagreed with it. I think I really want to salute Harris. Sometimes I find him very funny. Sometimes I don't. I think a lot of people thought that he was not at his best last night. But Hollywood spends a lot of time at these ceremonies patting themselves on the back for how brave they are. And they had the president of the Academy saying, you know, how committed they are to freedom of expression. Apparently not committed enough to give Clint Eastwood a Best Director nomination. or you know, various others. We perceive Hollywood as marching in this absolute lockstep liberal viewpoint and being very stifling of dissent and not welcoming that. Citizen Four gives the story of Edward Snowden from the Snowden point of view. A little jarring to see Glenn Greenwald up there on stage accepting an Oscar. I guess I should, say congratulations to him. But during their speech, it was a one-sided story. And the irony is, you and I have, been very critical of the NSA every now and then and kind of believe that the Obama administration has been pretty irresponsible in its management of this and not been honest with the public. But there is another side of the story. And the fact that Snowden is hanging out with Vladimir Putin right now is a glaring indication that he may not be the American hero that some of his fans want him to be. So just being able to sneak the word treason in there and indicate that there are some people who think that Edward Snowden is guilty of treason, I think it's a very big deal, and I think it represented one of the few genuinely brave moments of the night. And so, Neil Patrick Harris, I tip the hat to you, sir. That was much braver than coming out on stage in your underwear.
I think we could have all done without that. Jim, do you think after Clint Eastwood addressed the empty chair in Tampa that he'd seen his last nomination?
Certainly, there are a lot of folks who think that. I think when American Sniper got the Best Picture nomination and Bradley Cooper got Best Actor, you can't say that Hollywood was completely snubbing it. It didn't win either of those categories. It won only for, I think, Best Sound Editing last night. This is so much about ego and rivalries and whose turn is it and other factors that I doubt that that was the only factor that he didn't get nominated and that his film didn't win the big awards last night. But I have a very hard time believing it wasn't a factor at all.
All right, on to the bad martini now. And it's weird. The Oscars are a good martini. Charles Krauthammer is our bad martini. It's off to a bizarre week here on the Three Martini Lunch. But nonetheless, last week in his Friday opinion column, which is normally revered by conservatives, Charles Krauthammer decided to argue for the permanent abolition of the filibuster entirely in the U.S. Senate. The context, of course, is this looming fight over funding of the Department of Homeland Security. It's going to run out at the end of the week. The Republicans clearly don't have the votes in the Senate, the 60 votes right now required under the rules, to advance the bill and get it to the president's desk, which it would find a veto then anyway. So Krauthammer wrote about this, and he also explained it on Greta Van Susteren's On the Record program on Thursday on Fox.
So if you're going to get the blame, I think what they ought to do is abolish the filibuster and actually pass the budget for Homeland Security, which leaves out any of the funding in the Immigration Service for the unlawful, illegal executive amnesty of the president, and then send it on to the president. Remember, the Democrats are the ones who attacked the filibuster. They partially dismantled it again on a very party line vote 2 years ago, and I think having begun the demolition, the Democrats have, the Republicans ought to finish it. Abolish the filibuster, take control of the Senate, pass the House a bill, and send it on to the president.
But here's the problem, Jim. The filibuster, if you get rid of it, number one, you still don't have enough votes to override the president's veto. The way the media is working right now, if Obama vetoes it, I'm not sure that that helps the Republicans win the PR war. And if the Democrats get control of the Senate again, it looks a lot like the House.
Greg, I'm not even going to say this is a bad martini. I'm going to say this is a complicated martini.
Okay.
Because there is a part of me in my gut that very much believes that once the Democrats had abandoned the filibuster for nominations and certain other decisions, there really was no point for Republicans, once they had the majority, to reinstate it fully and to do all that. I think we're drifting in the direction of the filibuster becoming a self-imposed limitation that neither party will ever really want. It's unlikely for either party to ever get 60 votes, or certainly the odds are against it. So at that point, the minority, with their 41 or 42 or however many votes, can stop a lot of stuff from getting to the president's desk. And the only good news about having the House and Senate for Republicans and not having the White House is you can send a lot of stuff to the president's desk and force a lot of difficult vetoes. This was the entire plan throughout the midterms. This is what was said to Republican grassroots voters, saying, hey, we know we can't win the presidency, but we can definitely make some serious headaches for the president by making him veto things that we know are popular. If the 41 or 42 Democrats can be able to stop that whenever they want, this isn't going to go particularly far. My suspicion is that there's a certain value to this. I think your instinct that we should keep the filibuster, that Republicans should not trash tradition, is a good one. I have a feeling circumstances are going to push Republicans in the direction of Krautheimer, though.
It could. That's certainly the inclination when you have the majority. I would just point out, though, that if the Democrats had not had the filibuster, we would have had cap and trade. We would have already had an amnesty bill. And who knows what else during the Harry Reid era. So
completely a fair point. Yes. My suspicion is that we don't have responsible leaders anymore. Kind of like you need a republic if you can keep it. We need to be certain. America is great because it is good. You need a certain amount of virtue. And we have an entire group of leadership that doesn't see any value to something like the filibuster because they just can't understand the shoe ever being on the other foot.
Yes, exactly. So very, very interesting to watch. An interesting debate to have, certainly. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And this one is even scarier than anything we just discussed. This is courtesy of Rasmussen Reports. Hat tip to Hot Air for reporting on this. The latest Rasmussen Reports national telephone survey finds that 26% of likely U.S. voters think the president should have the right to ignore federal court rulings if they are standing in the way of actions he feels are important for the country. But perhaps more unsettling to supporters of constitutional checks and balances is the finding that 43% of Democrats believe the president should have the right to ignore the courts. Only 35% of voters in President Obama's party disagree, compared to 81% of Republicans and 67% of voters not affiliated with either major party. Jim, I don't know if that would tilt a little bit differently if there were a Republican in the White House at the time that question was asked, but this is just really horrifying on a number of levels, and I would like to think if a Republican was in the White House that 81% wouldn't budge too much.
My fear is this is the upshot of years of poor education and years of poor constitutional education, civics, government classes. People don't understand why our government is set up the way it does. And thus, they kind of end up with this, well, if it's a good idea, we should do it. and I kind of have, I remember having a conversation with a wise man not too long ago who said the difference between a conservative and a right-wing radical is that the conservative cares about how he gets what he wants. The right-wing radical only cares that he gets what he wants. Well, I think there's a lot more radicalism in this country than we like to admit. And there's a problem with that because, the founders understood a lot about human nature. They understood a lot about power. They understood a lot about what it would take to preserve liberty. There's certainly some unnerving indications that a large chunk of our population has completely forgotten that. I actually recently had a debate with the blogger Ace of Spades about this. He's ready to give up. He's ready to say, that's the end of it. End of the American experiment. I think we really got to get out there and explain, do our best to explain to people why we have this system of checks and balances. Think of it, checks and balances protect you from really bad ideas. How many people have had their lives messed up or had really serious consequences from an idea that seemed like a good idea at the time? Think of checks and balances as the aspirin and water before going to bed when you've been drinking a lot. It saves you from the worst consequences of your own bad decisions. And that's a, I don't know if that's metaphor necessarily the founders would have had in mind, but I think that's hopefully something we can assure, you know, how to get across to the American people that sometimes what seems like a good idea on Monday seems like a terrible idea on Tuesday.
Jim, I think it's a little-known Federalist paper that says you can do whatever you want as president if, A, it's common sense, B, B, you're on...
Would Thomas Paine have anything to thought on that?
B, you're on the right side of history.
Ah, there you go, yes.
And C, you've waited long enough.
Ah, that's very, very good justifications. You're right. I mean, basically, that all adds up to, I really want to.
Exactly. Sad day. At least we can laugh sort of about it. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.